Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Unlock a new era in podcasting with Unfiltered Studios. Ready to break free from the ordinary? Dive into a world where authenticity meets innovation. Our network isn't just about podcasts. It's a revolution. From nostalgia to movies, sports to self-improvement, find your favorite podcast in an array of diverse shows. Only at Unfiltered Studios. Join the movement. Subscribe to Unfiltered Studios today and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com today to find your favorite show.
Unfiltered Studios will help you press record.
And hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. I have my good friend Bob with me from Static Radio. He joined me last time for the review for Fright Night. We had a great time doing it. So now we're doing episode one of Dune Prophecy, season one. So let's go on ahead. Let's talk about Dune Prophecy. And hey, Bob, welcome back to the show. I just want to tell you, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me again. Yeah, we couldn't get a more different thing to watch than Fright Night.
Exactly. So we decided to go with a little bit of sci-fi, mixing them with a little bit of fantasy, you know, with that kind of element.
Yeah.
And
yeah, exactly. It's all kinds of good genres mixed together.
For sure, man. Here's the thing. I'm a huge fan of Dune 1 and also Dune 2. And I wasn't sure if this was actually going to be something that I was going to like or not, because I know the director is not attached to this or anything like that. So I was kind of a little bit frightful of it because of the fact that, you know, at least with the Matt Reeves with the Penguin, at least, you know, you have Matt Reeves's thumbprints on there in some kind of capacity. With this, I wasn't sure.
Yeah. So yeah, no Denis Villeneuve, right, on this one.
Right.
So, and I mean, as far as I know, he had nothing to do with it, right? This is a totally separate kind of deal from the movies. And so, yeah, I mean, you didn't know what you're going to get, but, you know, it looks like Dune.
It does. It really does. I think that this actually enhances the experience of Dune, especially with the political stuff within the universe itself. I really love the religion stuff, the political stuff around it. I thought it was a great introduction into this world, which is like 10,148 years before.
Where did they get that number at, right? Let's go 10,148 years. It's like, could you have picked another number? I don't know. Yeah, but I mean, it looks like the world. I mean, you know, if you really squint, it's not quite as glossy and cinematic as the Dune movies, but you know, they obviously had a good budget and they have a really good set design, and they carry through the, you know, 10,000 years ago, it wasn't quite as nice. So that's
no, it wasn't. And the thing that I really liked about this was, you know, it's where the machines are actually taken over at the very start of it. It has like this Terminator one kind of vibe to it, you know, where basically it's human versus machines. And I love that whole entire concept of it.
Oh, yeah. And the beginning of this episode moves. I mean, it moves. I was expecting it to be a little slower paced at the beginning for some reason. I thought, you know, they'll ease us into this kind of, you know, situation. But I mean, it sprinted. It got you through a lot of setup to get you into what the kind of the meat of the show was going to be, and took you through, you know, that whole, I got the Terminator vibes as well. And they even kind of, in a way, you know, mimicked in some of those wide shots where they're, you know, kind of fighting the machines, kind of looked a little bit like Terminator. Obviously, you know, Terminator's what, 84? So it's been a while ago, so it looks a little different, but it kind of gives you that vibe.
For sure. And then you also have the other thing too, where, you know, it opens up to the fact that you have, it captures the traditions of what one is to believe is the right way, while others also wants to break away from the tradition and the religion of what one of the characters winds up discovering. Because the ancestor's like, okay, promise me on my deathbed that you keep the traditions the way that I laid them out before everybody. Mm-hmm. So you have this one character that actually cares about the traditions, cares about the religion, while the other character wants to destroy it and basically get you away with the traditions and the religion of it and the politicals, the politics mm-hmm. of it, which right, I thought was really fascinating.
Well, and I mean, it gets into other areas too, where they talk about the DNA and you know, it really is much more complex. It kind of gives you, since they're not really calling themselves the Bene Gesserit or whatever at this point, but in the movies, it kind of gives you a deep backstory to why these folks were acting the way they were in the movies, because they really were kind of mysterious. They called them witches and called them this and that, but they really weren't super defined for the movies, really. They were kind of, you know, left a little vague. And so obviously right. this show is going to get into all that, but I mean, it jumped right in with both feet at the beginning. So you don't get that all the time, you know? A lot of times the shows kind of pace themselves a little too much sometimes, I think.
I think so, too. I think it knew what it wanted to be and knew the audience that it wanted to target. Because I feel like this, if you're not a fan of the Dune series, of Dune 1 or 2, you're not going to like the show if you find those two boring. This is for the people who love Dune and love the fantasy and sci-fi aspect of it. And that's who it's for. And it's geared towards me. It's geared towards you. And I love it. And then usually with time jumps, right? Because we have that happen in House of the Dragon recently in season one with the time jumps. So it goes into being the young woman. And then it winds up showing us 30 years later, which is also 116 years of the Great Machine Wars as well. Yeah. So you have two different timelines within one universe and one episode.
Right. Yeah. But I think they managed it really well. I mean, it wasn't confusing or anything. I mean, sometimes they can, you know, do these jump arounds, you know, flashback, flash forward so much that you get kind of lost in it. But I think they did a really good job keeping it together. And I would say, you'd mentioned House of Dragons. So if you are a person who likes Game of Thrones, House of Dragons, and so forth, even if you aren't, you know, so much into the Dune aspect of things, this has elements of that. I mean, very much so. I mean, it's very steeped in these kind of, you know, hierarchical traditions and people, right? You know, the Duke right. and the Baron and all these people that, you know, you see in the movie much later. Different people, obviously, their lineage, but you have this kind of, you know, royalty lineage happening, and you get to kind of see how things unfold and how the, you know, the sisterhood tries to guide that.
Right. And that's something I really liked, was the fact that it sets up all the houses, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And you have this one person on the throne, just like in Game of Thrones. So you've had that happening. And you also even have the princess who's engaged to an 8-year-old right. in this as well. So, yeah, it's very Game of Thrones-esque, if you will.
Right.
But
it's not really mimicking it, but it's got elements, right? So right. it's just, I mean, you know, if somebody was into, you know, British history or something, you have all the same kind of things that happen for real, right, in British history and in French history and so forth. And it pulls those elements, just like Game of Thrones does, and brings them up and puts them at play, right? It's the politics, the chess of politics, right? Where they're right. all jockeying for position. What I found really interesting, and I was kind of a little bit, I didn't expect this, I guess what I put it, is they do, you know, the spice is already prominent.
Right. That's something I really liked was it's actually its main thing as far as the spice goes, and that's what everybody's after.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I like that it's there.
It gives you, if you think about the timeline for the movies, you know, and Paul Atreides and everything, it gives you this, the history is just extremely deep when you think about that, because they're, you know, it's like they talk about that in the other movies, you know, have been doing this for so long, but now you're jumping back and you're like, oh my gosh, this has been going on forever. The spice trade and who controls the spice and so forth. And so it's really, it really deepens, you know, and broadens kind of the world of the movies as well.
Sure. The whole lore. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, it just fascinating to me because, you know, if you go all the way back to the 84 Dune, they're, you know, they talk about the spice as if they don't understand it fully. But obviously in the newer one, there's a lot more understanding. And then this shows you that, yeah, you know, everybody, you know, they know what this is, you know, does at this point. They haven't talked about time jumps and things, but, you know, as far as the spice and being valuable, it's already established.
Right. And there's also something else I want to mention is like the show's narrator, Bela Harkon, that she also explains the context of the universe led by the House Atreides. The humans rose up against the thinking machines, and the Harkons were branded as cowards and banished to the destroyed world, hoping to change the history of lies that are spread by Atreides, you know? And
right.
You know, and then I just thought that Jessica Barden in her youth, and the fact that she joins the Bene Grayson as a disciple for the first Mother Superior, Requella, under Requella, that the Bene have embarked on a quest to bred better leaders using the generic archives. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was an interesting thing that they do with it.
Yeah, no, well. Definitely. It's fascinating, and it's fascinating that, you know, they have this interchange with like on his first name, but the Atreides, right, talking to Baron Harkonnen, and he kind of brushes him off. I mean, he's kind of just putting up with him, and it's such a, you know, night and day when you think about the movie, and Baron Harkonnen for the movie is this menacing, you know, entity. And here he's like this kind of wimpy guy at the party where he's like, hey, I got enough of you. I'm going to move on to this next thing. And it really is interesting because we all know this because we're, you know, we've already watched all this, right? So,
right.
But they, you know, if you think about it from the point of view of the writers for the show, they know that and they're using it to their advantage. And it just makes it all the more interesting to me. And I will note Mark Strong, who plays the emperor or whatever. He was, his performance in the party scene was masterful. I don't know if you noticed his, because he didn't say too much.
No, he didn't.
But his face changed so much as they went through that scene. Where he's, and they didn't do the inner dialogue. They did a little bit of inner dialogue, but they didn't do the constant inner dialogue that we've gotten with other of the movies sometimes. And he just goes through that scene and he's, you know, thinking about who's trying to, you know, screw him over and what's happening. And his wife is pressuring him and all these things are happening. And he's, you know, trying to keep it all together. And you can, and he just, to me, I was watching it and I was like, oh my gosh, this guy. Because normally he doesn't, the actor, he usually plays like a bad guy
right.
or a good guy. And it's not that level of depth in his performances, I guess I would say. Maybe there's more depth than I wasn't paying attention. But in this one, I was like, oh my gosh, because then they had the little salamander robot thing
right.
pops out, and he had to handle the situation where it's like, that's all, you know, a big no-no at this point to have this technology, but it's his daughter's wedding day to this 8-year-old to set up the, you know, the
I like how the princess plays it off though on that.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I love how the princess plays it off like she's protecting him. And then once it walked off, it goes, listen here, you little shit. If you do that again, I'll kill you myself. I'm like, damn. He's yeah, but 8 years that, old and already getting a lesson learned not to mess with your wife.
That's the politics, right? And that's right. It's all set up to for these people. And so it's like it brings out the, you know, the core of that person in that scene, really sets a lot of stuff up. It was really, to me, it was incredibly interesting. It could be an easily throwaway kind of a scenario, you know, the wedding, blah, blah, blah. But they turned that all into this kind of high stakes political stuff. I mean,
right. The
groom's dad was kind of a jerk, you know, it's interesting.
Right. Because remember, he's like, he winds up taking the technology away from the kid. And, you know, it gets into this whole entire religion stuff, though, too. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, we're not supposed to have this kind of technology. It's against our rules. It's against our regulations. And then like you said, Bob, like it goes against their whole entire politics altogether for even him having it. Mm-hmm. But, and, you know, he's like, well, F your politics, basically, because I'm going to have this toy.
Right. Yeah. And then he kind of goes along because he's trying to navigate this whole situation. It's so weird. And he's putting so much faith in his, you know, in guidance into the sisterhood that the person he's got with, which I'm blanking on her name right now, but.
Vela, or are you talking not about Vela?
The other one. Yeah.
Hula?
So yeah, Hula. Yeah. So he puts so much faith in her, right? Because this is the way it's supposed to be. Little does he know, you know, there's something else going on in the background. But he's, you know, he's questioning her. He's questioning the marriage, but he wants to keep it going because he thinks that that's what's supposed to happen. And it really is the conflict the character is fantastic, and I think he did a great job of portraying that without having to say much, if anything.
Exactly.
And then that's great. Yeah.
Right. And then, like, you remember mentioning Emperor Jeff Esesco as well. Just the whole entire deal of him dealing with everything all at one time and him just going through the emotions of everything, too. His anxiety is up to the point it's like, okay, I got to please this person, that person, and how do I go on ahead and play the politics of it and also please everybody else at the same time?
Right. Yeah, exactly. He's walking the tightrope, right? And it played out perfectly. Now you especially, have the... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry. But especially that one part where one of the characters said, well, bless your gods. And he's like, my wife is the one who believes in the gods. I don't.
Right. He kind of plays it off. He's like, yeah, you know, that's on her side, right? That's not on my side.
It's like, exactly. It's cool that she believes in that or whatever, but I don't. And I like that whole entire deal. It's like, yeah, I'm in front of my wife. I'm going to go ahead and act my best. But when I'm with somebody else, I'm not going to end up saying, hey, look, this is what I believe in because it's not something I believe in.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
So yeah, he kind of played him off and you know, told him what he was thinking a bit. So yeah, it was interesting though. And then you have this kind of the spoiler of things is Desmond Hart, which is played by Travis Fimmel. And he, I think he did a good job as well, but unfortunately Travis Fimmel usually he's playing a character that he's played many times before, I think, in this, where he's kind of the bad guy of sorts, misunderstood, let's put him that way. He's very misunderstood, and that's the kind of character he plays, and he's played in other things. I don't know if you saw, he was in a show called Raised by Wolves.
Yeah, okay. I know the character you're talking about. Yeah, you're talking about the Desmond Hart character.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, he was in that show called Raised, which I love, but they canceled it quickly. But he plays a very similar character that he played in that show a little bit. I mean, he was good to a point, and then he was kind of bad. Right now, I think we're undecided. I mean, I don't know if it's spoilers or not, but he does a few things in the episode that could be construed as not being very nice.
Especially what he does to the 8-year-old, and then what he does to the other person in this. This is going to be a non-spoiler review since the premiere was last night,
right?
And now it was like during the middle of the week. I'm like, okay, yeah, we'll do spoilers, but with this, we're just going to jump into just minor spoilers here and there, but not the major.
Yeah,
but yeah,
it, but yeah, I mean, and you know, he has his point of view, and he's trying to bring that to the Emperor and trying to, you know, tell him, hey, things aren't the way you think. And so that's just, he's being pulled in so many directions, the Emperor, and all these characters are trying to gain favor and trying to, you know, get their point of view in his head. And it is fascinating. I think they did a really, really good job of demonstrating that with this episode. And I hope they can keep it up. I mean, this is just the first episode. And then you get into Valya Harkonnen, and she is, you know, very determined and kind of moving things in the background. And the other thing that I was shocked by is she does the weirding voice, right?
Right.
And she's the only character that does.
Right. That made it kind of unusual, though, right? I mean, it was something that we haven't seen before, especially in the first two Dune movies and stuff like that, because now it's part of that universe that it got established. But now we're seeing the beginnings of that
in this,
I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, I did, too. And again, another area that, I mean, I didn't read a lot of stuff before I watched it on purpose. I like kind of go in real blank.
Same.
Other than what I've already got, I don't read specifically about the episodes. And I thought, oh, really? They're going to introduce this, you know, right out of the gate. I was like, wow. Because, you know, those are the kind of things you think they would build to, right? You know, a lot of times you take and you're like, they could make this whole season about spice. And finding out about spice, but they didn't. They could make the whole season about the weirding voice, but they didn't. And it's interesting.
It really is. But I think it was the whole fact of like, okay, you can only do so many episodes about the spice, or you can do so many episodes with this. It's like, okay, we're going to introduce the spice here, but we're going to also introduce you to these other characters that were the main two points of the Dune 1 and 2. But we're also going to keep within continuity of the houses, the political stuff, the religion stuff, and also the sisterhood. Because I think the sisterhood is very interesting, especially when you have these women are very strong and of power, who are basically saying, I don't need no man.
Right.
And lie. Yeah. And then I also like the science of it, though, too, of like, why do we lie? Why?
Right.
Where basically is a defense mechanism based in our brain to lie. And then the body rejects the lie because of the guilt that they carry with it. So I thought the science of it was very interesting of how she teaches it. And then also, too, the prince is also there for 10 years of training. And then she's also training with her brother, Constantine, I believe, as well with the swords and stuff. I thought it was really, really interesting on how they play off that narrative, especially with the women also fighting too.
Right. Yeah. And I was trying to remember, and I don't think that this is anything that carries through into the movies, but I don't know if you noticed that they, the truthsayers, right, they were doing hand signals or some type of hand things. And whenever they were, you know, they were kind of secretly communicating to each other, even though they were, you know, different house aligned, right? And I don't remember that anywhere else. I was like, have I, you know, I was racking my brain. I was like, have I seen that? You know, were they doing that in either of the movies? But I don't think so. I don't think that this is something that's just part of this world currently. And they were, you know, doing this nonverbal communication with their hands, which I found interesting. And I thought, well, I wonder where they're going to go with that. You know, there's got to be more to it. Because it was kind of a, you know, they kind of focused on it a little bit there, so.
For sure. But yeah, all in all, I think this is actually a great introduction into what we're getting as far as the rest of the season goes.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really love this world. And it feels smaller in scale because we're watching it as a TV show versus how it's laid out in an entire two-hour movie. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, though, it also feels kind of big at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think they made it feel much more epic than, you know, normally that series do. Obviously, they put a lot of money into this. It shows on the screen. And so, yeah, I think it does feel more epic. And they had, you know, all the different places and set pieces and everything. And they didn't over rely on exposition. And I think that's was important to me because, you know, it is a world, right? So all this, like if you go into Star Wars, what makes it Star Wars is not that it has, you know, Luke Skywalker and Chewbacca in it. There's an aesthetic, and that aesthetic, whenever you see it, you go, that's Star Wars.
Right.
So there's an aesthetic.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The aesthetic is actually the planets and the world that other characters live in and they share. And then you also go to another planet and you learn something else. This is exactly the same thing where you actually go into different worlds where you learn about different things as you go on with each character and also their religion and stuff and also their politics.
Yeah, and they nailed it. I mean, they have the Dune aesthetic going. And so, you know, it works. Even the ships and everything, even though they were different, had the aesthetic. And so it's one of those weird things that I don't know that a lot of people dwell on, right? That's all surface stuff, but it really does make a lot of difference when you're watching it, because then you're immersed in that world when you're watching it, as opposed to being pulled out of it because you see, you know, the Chrysler building or something in the background, right, which is real. You know, I mean, there's nothing like that. It looks nothing like our world.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. Now, the only kind of negative comment I have, and this is something that I struggle with a lot of science fiction shows, is it's 10,000 years in the past, yet they still got pretty darn good technology. You know what I mean?
Right, but for me, I feel like the technology didn't really change all that much versus how we've seen it in the other two Dune movies.
Right,
I just felt like it was like basically the same technology. So it's like, okay, we're against technology, but at the same time, we're just going to keep our old shit and forget about anything new. Like we're against new, but we'll keep the old.
but I always, because I think about, you know, if you relate it to the real world, as it were, you know, our technology changes drastically. I mean, we didn't have cell phones 30 years ago. Everybody didn't have a cell phone. Now we all do, and all this kind of stuff. Whereas there, you know, 10,000 years and the technology is fairly steady. You know what I mean?
Right.
No big leaps and jumps. I mean, the ships and so forth have changed and whatnot, but no dramatic things. And so, but that's me, right? That's my head going in 10,000 years. Don't you think they have cooler stuff? I mean, you know, they did the fighting training scene, right?
Right.
And they had the I can't remember what they call those things, but basically they had the shields on, right? They were wearing the things so that they were kind of shielded. You could see the little blue thing, and then it was showing where they were hitting. So it was blue if you're just touching, but it was red if the weapon touched. And,
right.
You know, it was very much, you know, like it was in the movies a little bit. And so I'm like, oh, I wonder why, you know, why did they keep that even as opposed to, you know, downgrading it a bit? And then also watching the playback of the sandworm and Desmond Hart, which I thought was fantastic the way it looked. But I also thought, well, you know, it was too cool to be 10,000 years ago, maybe. I don't know. But exactly. I mean, maybe the pace is different. I guess that you have a point with the saying that, you know, it's a different world and they treat technology differently. And that's, we just have to get used to that. And I'm glad they haven't explained it. I like to, you know, be in my own head thinking about these things.
Same here. I'm okay if they explain it like in the second episode or whatever, but I like to use my imagination because I'm like, this is too much in deep detail to not think about. And right. I like the fact that they allow us a chance to just speculate and let us slowly digest this first episode and just expand on things that we would normally think about. So that's something I really do appreciate with the first episode coming out of the gate with this. And, you know, I wanted to mention this real quick, if you don't mind. But, you know, there's also this other scene that gets played out too, where Princess Jens has one night out with her brother, Desmond.
Mm-hmm.
And I like how he counsels Carano and telling him that he more prominent issues is to growing in insurgencies on Arrakis. Reveals that he knows that the marriage is wrong, but must do it to maintain control over Arrakis. Jens and Atreides flirt and have sex, so they go to a sex club, and they wind up doing the deed. But I really like the fact that, you know, what he's thinking is, this is morally wrong, but I know because of the politics within this and everything, we have to let this play out, regardless of what we think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that kind of also plays into the whole, you know, royalty aspect of things, right? So
It goes in with the whole war hidden in plain sight kind of quote that they have, though, too, applying it against being Garset, you know?
Right. Yeah, no, but I mean, I wasn't sure, you know, going into this, you know, could go either way. You know, you're watching it and you're like, this could take a nosedive or this could be good. But I think it was, they really did a excellent job of in a first episode of setting everybody up. You get a kind of a lay of the land and where people are kind of going. And, you know, and you want to know, the most important thing is you want to know what's next.
Exactly. And that's something that I really have to, I'm probably end up watching the next episode because I am invested into this world. I like the first two movies, like I mentioned, and, you know, I'm just sold on this. I'm sold on this world on a TV aspect. Whenever before I was like, okay, I'm not sure if this is going to work. The original director's not attached to it. I don't know if this is going to be smaller in scale, but it also does feel a little bit larger in life because of the different planets, because of the religion stuff, because of the politics that each person's playing. Also, too, the chess pieces that these people are moving and embodying and everything, too. And especially with the backstabbing of the Duke, that's probably going to go down in the next episode.
Right.
God, there's just so much detail within the first episode.
Yeah, it is chock full. I mean, it's so much. I mean, I really probably should watch it again before the next one just to keep things straight because so much happened. It moved so well. That's not always the case with these kind of tentpole series that happen. You know, sometimes they, you know, meter it out. When Game of Thrones was really popular, as they got in past the first few seasons, they drug stuff out. You know, sometimes. And I remember watching it, my wife and I watching it, and we're like, well, nothing happened in that episode. I mean, it all looked great, but
the cinematography looked great.
Yeah.
But as far as the plot, it didn't really move anything. It was just there for
anybody forward. Yeah. And House of Dragons has done that already in the first couple seasons. They trapped him in the castle forever, it seemed like. But anyway, that's a whole other show.
For season two, which we both... Basically, I call that the side quest part of... As a matter of fact, I actually did a game, the House of the Dragon season one and two review for the podcast and stuff like that, too, that people can check out as well. But yeah, this is... just like The Penguin, I think this is a fantastic show. I think you guys... might actually have a chance to check it out. We'll probably do this again, probably if you are down to do this again on Monday.
Sure. Yeah, I'd love to. I think that this, hopefully this can keep its momentum. I mean, it's on a high note right now. And, you know, the next episode, Until we get past a couple, you know, next episode, we'll see if it doesn't take a nosedive. But so far, so good.
So far, so good for starting out. But yeah, I'm okay with filler as long as it moves the plot and as long as it doesn't go into the next couple of episodes.
Right.
Just to have, but yeah, great start. I'm excited for it. But my question for you guys that are watching, are you guys excited for Dune Prophecy Episode 2? Tell me in the comments below. Tell us what you think of our thoughts. It doesn't matter what we think. It matters what you guys think. So tell us your thoughts in the comments below. And also, too, if you guys want to geek out with me or nerd out with me and everything, too, just email me at movielovesunite@gmail.com if you guys want to nerd out about some Dune prophecy with maybe some of your fan theories and stuff like that coming into it. But right now, I have none. I'm just excited and ecstatic that we even have a TV series for Dune to expand the universe even more. So, yeah, that's where I'm at right now.
I totally agree. And yeah, episode two, I'm crossing my fingers and hoping it's good.
Me too. So, Bob, do you have anything coming out as far as your podcast goes? Anything that you want to actually bring to the table?
Sure. Well, you can always listen. Staticradio.com. We do weekly shows. Last week I talked about Chicago pizza, but not deep dish. Go figure. Who does that? Exactly.
Right, exactly. But anyways, guys, you guys can follow Bob. I have everything in the description below for you guys to follow him. So always until next time, guys, have a great and safe night, and we'll catch you guys on the next one. Have a great day.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.